the Black Hills Mystery Hole.
I didn't go to that. What is that?
So it's one of those, you know, streets, roadside attractions. It's just bull crap, but it's supposed to be like a place where the, you know, the Earth's magnetic fields are weird and you walk through it and you feel like you're dizzy and the floor is not level and all this weird stuff. Like, it's nonsense, but it's fun.
Okay. So I'm really curious now because there's a place on Route 60 in West Virginia called the Mystery Hole. And I don't know if it's still open or not, but it is pretty much the exact same thing. It was like things roll uphill and, you know, water goes uphill.
There is. It's probably owned by the same people. Yes. That's exactly the Black Hills Mystery Spot or whatever they call it. Mystery.
Yeah. Hole. I can't believe, man, I don't feel so special anymore. This is kind of a downer. All right, let's roll into it. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Jay and Joey on the Record. I'm Joey.
I'm Jay.
So this is our third episode, only 296 records to go. Jay, for the new listeners, what are we doing here?
We are going through my record collection, and we are going to listen to every single album I have.
Perfect. And specifically, what's the concept behind today's idea?
So this week, we're actually going to be talking about albums that I bought specifically because I thought the cover was cool. So it's really five albums that I bought entirely based on what the cover looked like. Before this moment, before this week, I had actually only ever listened to one of them. So this is totally new for me as well.
Okay, so I really admire anyone who can purchase a record based on the cover art. I've been tempted to do that, but I'm always afraid that it might just suck, which is kind of a fun experience in and of itself, I guess, and kind of worried about wasting money and shelf space, which is honestly, those are just dumb fears. And yeah, when you sent me this list, I had heard of one of these bands, and I hadn't even heard them. So fair warning, this might be the longest episode to date because I had lots of notes and I just really enjoyed this task.
And I will be mentioning what I paid for each of these albums when we talk about it. I'll let you decide if it was a waste of money or not. First things first, we're going to be talking about the Dixie Dregs. The album is called Dregs of the Earth. It was released in 1980 on Arista Records. It actually received a Grammy nomination for Best Rock Instrumental Performance. So let me tell you about how I came to acquire this album and what the cover looks like, since that's kind of the theme for this week. So I bought this at, as I've mentioned before, a record auction, sort of charity auction that's held every year in Lawrence, Kansas. It benefits people who are deaf and hard of hearing. So kind of a neat little thing. I paid $1 for it. On the cover, it's got like a seaside kind of scene. So there's, you can see the ocean in the background. It's on the beach. There's like really scraggly, almost burnt vegetation. And then there are these paper mache humanoid sort of crawling around, really spindly hands coming out of the sand, crawling over the dunes.
Yeah, it's a little creepy. It kind of like some Slender Man vibes going on.
Absolutely.
With the cover, I just didn't know what to expect. My first assumption was with the name and then with that cover was something like anti-scene, but what I heard was just so different than my expectations.
Right. I thought this would be an 80s, I was thinking like an 80s metal band that I'd never heard of before, like early metal band. This one is, so I had zero experience with this. When we listened to this for this episode, it's the first time I had heard it. And it is what I would describe as instrumental Southern prog jazz rock. You think that's a pretty fair description?
That's pretty much, 100% on the money. I think I called it like hillbilly twang jazz.
Yeah, it's like jazz Kansas or jazz yet, something like that. I mean, that's kind of what it is to me, like prog Southern. It's cool, though. So what did you think of it upon first listen here?
Two things that I want to get out of the way first. I do hate the band name. Yeah. Just there's something about it. It's probably the Dixie part that I hate. But I'm also wildly impressed that they've been consistently active for 50 years. And when I saw that, it kind of shifted my expectations even more. And I'm not going to lie, I had a lot of fun listening to this one.
Yeah, absolutely. And, about the name, they've actually had a few different name changes. It's one of those bands. Also, when you like, if you go to like their Wikipedia page or whatever, you're going to see like 20 different lineups listed because it has been changing over the years. You know, who's actually in the Dixie Dregs. They started as the Dixie Grit, which still not a good name. Then they were the Dixie Dregs. And then later on, to try to gain a little commercial traction, they changed it to just the Dregs, which is better.
Yeah, that's definitely better. It has kind of a 60s mod rocker vibe to it, though.
That's a little better, but it's still not quite what I would think of when I think of like what the actual music is. But again, I don't know what I would even think of for a band that plays this kind of music. I don't think there are very many bands playing this kind of music. So let's talk about the music itself. First, go through what struck you the most.
It is just in your face immediately. Like, you hit play and it just gives you an open-handed slap. And I could not believe the whole album is instrumental.
I didn't either. And I didn't know what to expect, obviously, because I'd never heard it. But as soon as I hit drop the needle, it hits you. And I honestly thought there was something wrong with my record. I thought like a jump or a skip in there. So I started it over and sure enough, just boom, right into it, right off the bat with an instrumental prog, Southern prog sort of sound in that first song. And then it goes into Pride O' the... So the first song is from Road Expense and it is what it is. It's pretty good. I got a kick out of it. But the next song is called Pride O' the Farm. And... yeah, tell me what you thought of Pride of the Farm, because I have a lot of notes on Pride of the Farm. But what did you think of it?
I mean, it swings in, and my first thought was just, what the fuck is this? And that's where the hillbilly twang jazz note came from. I mean, it's bonkers in just a great way. There's, you know, this proggy keys, and then all of a sudden, like, banjo, electric banjo breakdowns, and it's tweaky.
It's one of those, like you said, it's got the traditional banjos. I think there's maybe a mandolin or something in there, piano. There's a mouth harp at one point with a little bang, 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 you know, I don't know how to do the mouth harp sound, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Bang, 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 bang. Yeah.
I was sitting there stomping my foot and clapping along and just thinking to myself, man, so there are bands that I would pay a pretty good amount of money to see in person. And this is immediately one of them. I would pay a huge chunk of money to watch this band play Pride of the Farm in person. I think it would be an absolute blast. Maybe pound a couple beers and watch them just get to it.
I went through some of their YouTube videos and some of the comments talking about their live performances. I feel like I have been missing out on something for the past 37 years by having never heard of this band, never seen this band anywhere. But now I'm going to search these folks out. Like, I'm not a full blown Dregs head by any means, but I'll be, they didn't find a soft spot in my heart.
Like, example, what kind of comments were you running into?
So there was this one guy who said that he saw them in the Bay Area in sometime in the early 80s. In fact, it probably was around the time this album came out. And he said it changed his life. And I mean, there's no reason not to believe him. He said that he has seen like 500 bands live and yeah, they're still the best. And I'm intrigued.
Dude, I believe him. It was horrific. Like, I think I'm a full-blown Dregs head. And you know what's funny? So, all right, the first time I listened to this, it was on, I actually listened to this twice. So far, for these episodes, I've listened to most of the albums just once. This one I listened to twice, and it was because it was so different and weird and like nothing I'd ever heard before. I wanted to make sure that my notes that were overwhelmingly positive didn't make me seem like an idiot. Like, was it really as good as I thought? Because it was the first time I heard it Saturday morning. I was like totally chilled out. It was the perfect mindset for this. Listen to it again. It's still fantastic. My wife is a Dregs head. Like, I came up from the basement from listening to this and she said, I think I like the Dixie Dregs. I was like, I know, me too. Like, they're freaking awesome. So yeah, we got at least two new Dregs heads in this house.
Yeah. She's like, honey, I know we just moved to Fort Collins about a year ago, but how do you feel about uprooting our lives and following them around once COVID has passed?
We're going to become Dregs groupies.
So I was in a similar situation where I was like, did I just listen to this at in a time where I was just feeling good regardless, and I could have put on anything and I would have loved it. And I revisited it, and okay. So there are some times where songs sound like the full version of a TV theme song.
Sure.
But man, like something like The Great Spectacular, it's just so short and manic. And then there's that really long track called I'm Freaking Out that has that bass breakdown. And like, I was freaking out at that point. Like, it's just a redneck disco party.
The first time I listened to that, you're exactly right on both of those. Great Spectacular. My notes just say all over the damn place. And it was in a good way, because it was, it's manic. Like you said, it's like a carnival type song, like, you know, a big giant carnival. But then you go into, like you said, I'm Freaking Out, 9 minute long song. That bass solo, I had an audible hoot. Like I yelled like, woo. When that was over, and my wife heard and came downstairs and was like, what's up? I was like, this band, like I'm in love with this band. I bet there are a lot of people out here. I bet there are some real dads out there. And this is dad's music to me. Like I bet.
Oh yes.
Love the Dixie Dregs.
Yeah. This is like 100% a demographic that I'm going to land in like 12 to 15 years, where I'm just that weirdo 50 plus guy who is listening to this freak Southern jazz, and people are like, who, I can't tell if your dad's weird or cool. But yeah, I mean, to me, the album's kind of a fever dream. One thing that I thought was interesting was that their drummer, Rod Morgenstein, is a professor at Berklee School of Music in Boston. And that's a legit, like, fantastic music program. I mean, I don't know if it's the best on the East Coast. I guess that might be like the New York Conservatory or something. I mean, it's one of the top music schools in the entire U.S. and, I mean, world for that matter. And I mean, honest to God, if we move back to Boston, I'm hunting him down. And he was in Winger. The drummer was in Winger. Like,
all that. Yes. So yeah, dude, it's funny. They actually met at, in music school, a lot of them. That's when the band kind of formed. They were in music school together. So it makes sense. I guess I don't have a ton more to say on this one other than definite Dregs head. I'm hooked. When we're done with this project, and I have made a promise to myself, I'm not buying any more albums till we're done with this. But when we are done with this, I am going to seek out as many Dixie Dregs albums as I can find.
Yeah. I'm going to call Papa Jazz and see what they have on hand and see what I can start stocking up on. Cause I mean, that was $1 spent very well.
Correct. Correct. Number two on the docket today, we're going to be talking about a band called Cirith Ungol, or Cirith Ungol, I think is how they prefer it to be pronounced, which is actually a reference to the Pass of the Spider in the Tolkien Lord of the Rings books. Nerding out big time there. But so the album is actually called King of the Dead. It was released in July 1984 on Enigma Records. So let's talk about, since we're doing, you know, based on, I thought the cover was cool. Let's talk about the cover here really quick. The cover of this album, it's got a guy with a sword standing over a treasure chest sort of looking thing with a large skeletal demon guy in front of him. You got some weird humanoid half Neanderthal creatures in the foreground. So same creatures kind of in the background. Very, very cool. And it's actually a book cover from a book in the genre of sword and sorcery. So I don't know if there's any fantasy readers out there, but I'm sure you've heard of sword and sorcery books. So really, really cool album. I paid $18 for this, having never heard it. But I paid $18 because it came with a badass t-shirt with the same logo on the front.
So was this a repress?
It is, yes.
Okay.
The reprint Ultimate Edition. It also came with a giant poster with the same kind of graphic on the front of it. It's also got like a 12-page booklet inside of it with pictures of the band, some guitar tabs and stuff. It's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a pretty sweet little haul for only 18 bucks. That description of the cover, I mean, if that doesn't have somebody pausing the podcast and looking this up on Spotify or wherever, then I don't know what will. That was pretty spot on.
So had you heard of Cirith Ungol before?
So I had heard of them, and I don't know if it's because of Lord of the Rings or because of the actual band themselves, but the name had definitely been in my mind, but as far as the music, absolutely not.
So the only reason I had heard of them is I was actually reading through the Lord of the Rings books for, I don't know, my third time or something. And I got to the chapter where it's talking about Cirith Ungol. And I thought to myself, that would be a pretty badass name for a band. So I Googled it and turns out there already is one. I got on their website, saw the really cool album cover with a really cool t-shirt for not a lot of money, and went and popped and bought it.
Kind of the great names are always taken.
I know. I was all ready to go. Although I will say, have something else to say about that once we get into this a little bit. But so upon first go around here, what'd you think of Cirith Ungol?
So I was kind of cracking up about 30 seconds into this in a good way, because it hits you like a mallet, and the lead singer just loves elongating the vowels, especially the A's on so many tracks. And it has that just kind of fantasy, high-pitched falsetto, like prototypical metal.
Metal Geddy Lee. Like,
yeah, yes. Yeah. Like, it's kind of like that, just like very showy, you know, a lot of flair.
I'm in the same boat. Like the voice, the dude's voice stuck out to me. And if you look at my notes for this, they kind of go from, as we move through song to song. I mean, my first bit of notes say, you know, when the guy is not singing, I really like this. And I have in there, it's going to take some getting used to the dude's voice. But it's also very, very much what was going on, I think, in metal at the time, or in at least this genre of metal at the time.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely, it's the sound of the times. And I think, you know, like I mentioned, the elongation of the vowels, I was like, this is so just gaudy and ostentatious. And I kind of hated it, kind of loved it. But then I'll tell you what sold me, and this was pretty early on the album. I think it might actually be the first track, was Atom Smasher. And there's this fucking line, and I'm not sure if you caught it, but it goes, born in a test tube, raising Cain. And the way he says it with like that, born in a test tube, raising Cain. Yes. And I was like, this is brilliant. I love you guys.
As we move through this podcast, I'll probably mention this more than once, but I'm not a huge lyrics guy. No, I mean, I do listen to the lyrics. I pay attention to them, but I'm not a huge lyrics guy.
Sure.
But this band, some of the lyrics on this album are so sick and dark and heavy that I was hooked. I'm so hooked on this. And you know, song two, Black Machine, I don't know if you have any notes on that one, but the one that really grabbed me is song number three, Master of the Pit. Talking about band names, that would be a sick band name. But that one got a little bit more doomy than the first two, and it was almost like it was Black Sabbath-esque, like the bass lick and the drums off. And by the time the guy started singing on that one, I was in. I'm hooked. I'm into Cirith Ungol now. I'm totally down for this.
Yeah. So I'm glad you mentioned that track, because the bass on Master of the Pit, it's so sloppy, but it's so great at the same time. And then there's that robotic vocal backing track effect that is insane towards the end, where it's like master. And I put a note that says this album was the first time I was really annoyed we can't insert music due to the royalties and copyrights, because people just have to hear this.
You have to hear the guy's voice to really even understand what we're talking about. Like in my notes I have, it's like, though, Master of the Pit was like a Black Sabbath song if they had replaced Ozzy with like Skeletor or something. Like it's hard to describe the dude's voice, but pretty doomy. If King of the Dead, the next, yeah. Very, very doom. Kind of slower, but still pretty rad. But I will say another one that really, really grabbed me. Song one on side two, Death of the Sun. Do you have any thoughts on that one? Because that one really grabbed me. A lot of faster tempo, and the lyrics on that one were so sick.
Yeah, that one's pretty solid. I don't have too many notes on the B-side. So I want to hear what you have to say about that. And
so B-side, I mean, a lot of good stuff on there to me. Death of the Sun, I really liked. It was a little bit more up-tempo than the ones previous. Lyrics are about basically the earth burning up and Satan kind of taking over the place. So really dark. Then we go into Finger of Scorn, what's a little slower. I like that one. Has what my favorite lyric on the album, the beast will rule the hearts of men. T- till mankind falls to ape again. Like,
yeah. It's one of those lines where you're like, can I tag along with the beast?
Right. So, and then kind of funny, we got a Bach cover on this one too. So the second to last song is a Johann Sebastian Bach cover by this doom metal band from the mid 80s. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, the first of two classical pieces actually that we'll be talking about today. So just a little teaser for everyone. Death of the Sun was definitely my favorite track. The last song being a live track, I would love to know the story behind that. Like, did they need another track? Record company forcing them to do it? It doesn't fit in like at all. Maybe they were trying to showcase like, this is how we sound live. Come see us live. But it was just such a sore thumb on a hand. But again, I love the audacity of putting something like that on.
Any just general thoughts on Cirith Cirith Ungul? Cirith Ungul?
Yeah, so I've been trying to avoid doing research because I enjoy the surprise and learning something. But the fact that they formed in 1971, had a 24-year hiatus from 92 to 2016 and are active again, love that. I love the fact that their first gig was an anti-war rally in 1972.
Yes, I was struck by that too. And in my research on this one of the guys was saying, you know, I think our best album is King of the Dead. And he said that because he felt like they had more control over this one than anything else that they'd ever released. And part of that is, you know, if you notice their discography, there's a lot of time between the albums, between when they're actually putting things out. And the guy said, you know, a lot of that is because we are working, we're self-funding a lot of this stuff. So that's one of the takes us so long to put these albums out. But I will say, if you know, my overall review of this one, largely positive, a lot because it's kind of up my alley anyway, but I really like this.
That's how I felt. I was like, is this good? Not necessarily, but did I enjoy it? And would I go see them in a bar somewhere? Yeah, hell yeah, to both. I mean, especially knowing that they're Road Warriors, you know, maybe it's because they remind me of the fake metal band I started in college called Nightmare with a Y, and a song that I quote unquote wrote for them. I dug them. Like I was not in my head.
Totally. Yeah. I was in. I'm not as much as the Dregs, but definitely not opposed to listening to Cirith Ungul. I'll probably listen to this album again. Absolutely. It's worth $18 on a t-shirt for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And especially you can wear the t-shirt around and kind of freak the neighbors out a little bit. One thing that I think you'll really enjoy, a couple of expat friends in Vietnam got me the Periodic Table of Heavy Metals poster, and I had to see what was on there, and just by chance to see if they were on there, because there are a lot of bands on there and I hadn't looked at it in a while. So not only are they on there, they are in the group that is labeled as proto metal. So alongside Black Sabbath, Deep Purple, Jerusalem, Blue Oyster Cult, Mount Nazareth. So they were apparently very, very influential. And I had no clue. And it makes me respect that. And thinking about it, hearing this album, like, yeah, King of the Dead has to be the grandfather of sludge metal, right?
It is. Yeah. It's like, it's very sludgy, doomy. Like it is what you described. Yeah. It fits right in that realm. I got a real kick out of it. It's a fun album. It's worth listening to for sure. And if you're going to pick one song out, I would probably say Master of the Pit, but that's just my personal opinion. But check out the whole album.
Yeah, I would say Master of the Pit and then Death of the Sun.
Absolutely. Me too. That's my top two.
Hey everyone, Joey here with a quick note. We're looking at going fully independent since the corporate sponsor thing just isn't us. Now, if a network wants to scoop us up or someone wants to throw a fistful of cash at us, we'll sell out quicker than you can say promo code. But we think independent is the way to go, and we'll let you know the details soon. Thanks a lot.
Next up, we've got the album Auroville. A-U-R-O-V-I-L-L-E, Auroville. It's by the band The Grimace Federation. It was released on June 9th, 2017. It was self-released. I had no idea what to expect with this. I bought this album for $9.99 at Princeton Record Exchange in Princeton, New Jersey. I don't even remember what bin it was in, just kind of like a random bin, I think. It's a very, kind of looks like a space outpost on the cover. It's a black and white cover. You got sort of really stylized Grimace Federation in there, kind of intertwined with the, I guess, heat waves coming off this sun-like object. It's all black and white, like I said. The back is very, very spacey. And then the album itself is actually a black and white swirl album. It's like a colored album, so it's really cool. Had no idea what this was when I bought it. Still don't really have a good handle on what it is after I listened to it, but what'd you think of it?
So I think that's the perfect description of the cover. The font is kind of like, I don't know if you remember the cover from Arctic Monkeys' Favorite Worst Nightmare, but it kind of reminded me of that. But yeah, the way it looked and how the album sounded seemed like quite the juxtaposition of expectations and reality. To me, it's like a lazy MC Escher took the brown acid. You know, it's got that black and white layering, but kind of those hippie undertones. And it's, again, it's not what I thought it would be.
No, me neither. I mean, I had no idea. And actually, In picking this up when I bought it, my uncle had it in his hand. He said, if you're not going to buy this, I probably will, just because of how cool it looks. And I said, yeah, that is pretty cool. So I'll spend $9 on it and get it. And this was the first time I'd heard it. How would I describe it? I mean, it's electronic music.
And they're the most recent band we've listened to by like a good 35 years.
So first impressions of the Grimace Federation. What do you got?
So my first impression was, again, hated the name. Is it named after the facial action or the McDonald's mascot? And very erratic to me. Not necessarily a bad way, but it took me a while to adjust.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to have overwhelming praise for this, simply because I'm not a big electronic music guy, just in general. It's not my thing. I didn't think this was bad. They're definitely good musicians. But by the same token, none of it really grabbed me. I would just say that. I wasn't really kind of movie sound. Oh, it's instrumental, by the way. We didn't mention that. It is another instrumental album, the second one that we've talked about here. They're good instrument players. Just kind of sounded like a soundtrack to like a Bourne movie to me, for the most part.
It's got some post-rock and house elements thrown in, like on tracks like Danger Sequence. It really does bounce around from genre to genre. It's electronic post-rock house, chill wave, with tracks like Action Elevator.
Sure, and I totally agree on the post-rock. In fact, I have that in my notes. I mean, Be Kind to Animals, the third track on the album, very post-rocky. Let's see. So Did I Ever Tell You? That one's a little heavier. And again, post-rock, and I do like post-rock. I got into it really big in college. That one's kind of like post-rock band. You ever heard of God is an Astronaut?
Oh, yeah. That's a really good comparison.
Maybe some even older Alan Parsons Project type sounds to some of it, like the track Oroville, the title track.
Electronic and synthwave, those are genres that I like quite a bit. So I think Did I Ever Tell You is probably the standout. I put that it's gorgeous and it's glistening, and it does kind of nail that perfect balance of all those various worlds that they're trying to combine. I feel like they kind of all found their home on that track. And for me, that's the standout.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's the one that I have most notes on. That's the one that definitely stood out for me. Would I buy it again for $9? Probably not. But that's just me.
Yeah, that's understandable. I hate to be that guy, but I can't see myself plunking down a tenner for this one.
I will say this was their first release. So if there's anything to be said, you know, maybe they have progressed as they've moved along. Maybe I would like maybe some of the other stuff that they've put out, especially if it's similar to, you know, Did I Ever Tell You or Be Kind to Animals or any of those. So no, I don't want to, you know, flush them down the toilet entirely. It's just not my thing particularly.
No, yeah, I get that. I think that's a fair assessment, honestly. And I do look forward to seeing how they grow if it is related to those tracks like you mentioned. So what drew you to this cover? Because I can't tell what's going on there.
It's got a nautilus on it. So a nautilus is like a sea creature with like kind of looks like a snail shell on it, but it's also got a big eye with tentacles coming out. It's purple. I like purple. I don't know. So I bought this one online. I was on a record label's website, just looking at what they had because I knew what kind of music was on the label. Just looking at album covers that stuck out to me, to be totally
honest. Which label?
Sargent House is
okay.
I have at least one other from them, a band called Earth. But I knew what this was. I had never heard this band. The album's Creeps, the band's Indian Handcrafts, if we haven't mentioned that. It was released on October 2nd, 2015. It is kind of stoner metal, doom metal sort of sound. I'm assuming you'd never heard of Indian Handcrafts. Is that fair?
Absolutely not.
What'd you think? You want me to start?
Yeah.
So when I would say here, it's funny because it's a genre of music that I really like. I like stoner metal. If you look at the other albums in my collection, there are things similar to this. I have Red Fang. I've got The Sword. I've got some of that kind of stuff. This album is a lot of the things about that genre of music that I don't like and very little of the stuff that I do. A lot of it just kind of felt like noise for the sake of noise to me. I don't know. Is that fair? I mean, what did you think?
Yeah, I think that's about spot on. It's kind of typical head nodding stoner metal with a little more aggression. And it's just not where I am now or not where my headspace was.
Yeah, I mean, same. I have a couple notes, not extensive notes on this one. There was it's Lake Queenie's probably I would say if there was a standout track on it, that's probably the one. Kind of a Queens of the Stone Age sort of vibe to that one. Which I know you're not a big Queens of the Stone Age fan, just from previous conversations we've had. But really, I mean, the divider on the second side, seventh song, more of a classic rock sort of song.
Yeah, I like that one. I put that, I think that it's a fist pumper with a little sing-along part.
Is that the one with the hand claps? I think that one had some hand claps.
Yep.
So that one was solid.
I'll tell you, the one track that I genuinely really, really liked, and it might be the last track, but Degenerate Case, because I really like the backing female vocals in that kind of last 45 seconds to a minute. I have no idea who that was, but for me, she was the absolute highlight.
I agree. Yeah, that one And I did like the divider too, which I already mentioned. But those really, I mean, I don't want to say too many negative things. I'm sure they're fine. And the other part of it is they've opened for some bands that I love. Like they opened for Def Heaven at one point, which I love Def Heaven. They opened for Red Fang at one point, which I love Red Fang. I'm sure seeing them live, I probably would have enjoyed it, but in album form, wasn't my thing.
Yeah, I get that. They do kind of play like, well, if you experience it live with maybe, you know, some kind of light show in the atmosphere. And I mean, especially knowing that Death Heaven's coming up next, one of the most transcendent bands I've ever seen live. Yeah. I started rabbit holing. So we should move on. Cause I'm trying to figure out who in the world.
Yeah. I would actually be
these female vocals.
All right. So moving on. Next up, we're going to talk about Sabotage.
Listen, all of y'all, it's a Sabotage. Listen, all of y'all, it's a Sabotage.
Nice. So Sabotage, Hall of the Mountain King. This one came out September 28, 1987 on Atlantic Records. I bought this one again at that auction. The cover.
How much did this set you back?
This was $1 as well.
Okay.
At the top, it's got a very stylized Sabotage kind of metallic font. It's got what I assume is the Mountain King in the middle of this cover, shirt off, really ripped dude, six-pack abs. He's got a Viking winged helmet on, white beard, sitting kind of weird. He's got like a towel around his legs kind of looking. Shirtless, obviously, is what you want.
Yeah,
he's,
how else would you be sitting in the Hall of the Mountain King?
Kind of awkwardly down to his sides. He's got lightning bolts coming out of his fingers. In front of him on the floor is a treasure chest, a large book, and a disproportionately small axe. Like, it doesn't look like it, what's going on here.
It was definitely not very intimidating. It looked kind of like he was maybe whittling something.
Yeah, and he's also got like sandals, like the kind of sandals I would wear to the lake on.
Yeah,
long sandals. So not
yeah
intimidating, but I also
just ruling over his kingdom and some Chacos.
Or sure. But for a dollar, I saw this dude that is just looking like some sort of, you know, knockoff Lord of the Rings guy. And I had to pop. Oh, and the back. Oh my God, the back of this album. It's got all four members of the band like air on there with like really flowing hair, and they're like sort of gashed.
Very well defined cheekbones.
Yeah, and they're like a mist that's kind of rising out of a cauldron, but it's like their heads. So, I mean, that got me too. So that's the description of the album cover. Had you heard of Savatage?
Definitely not. That cover reminded me, or made me think, that it was somehow in the same universe as Cirith Ungol and King of the Dead, because the guys, like the white bearded guys, kind of, they look a little alike. They have some similar features. You know, they both have King in the name of the title. They both rely heavily on the falsetto. Yeah, I feel like it's kind of like the dime store version of what Cirith Ungol did on their cover.
I think so too. And I had heard of Savatage before I bought this album. They have a track called Gutter Ballet, I think is the name of it, that is just, it's pretty badass. I actually really like that one. And I'd actually,
that's a phenomenal name.
Yeah. I think it's on the next album after this one. And I had heard the song Haul the Mountain King before, because I used to drive a lot for work, and I briefly, whenever I would work, would buy me a new vehicle, I would have satellite radio for a little while. And I got really into listening to Ozzy's Boneyard, which is a older metal station on satellite radio. And they would,
speaking of dad music, like that station, I imagine is pre-programmed in a lot of dad's satellite radios.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, I'd heard of Savatage, although I will say for this project, this was the first time I'd listened to this album. So on first go round, what do you think?
I started to like it a lot faster than I thought I would. I'm not going to say I loved it, but I mean, it was some good late 80s Satan rock.
Sure. Yes, exactly. I mean, my notes on the first couple songs: wailing guitars, wailing vocalist, pretty much exactly what I expected from the cover. Like, I knew what I was getting into when I bought this.
Yeah, to me, it felt like some forgotten thrash. Like, maybe these guys were more popular than I realized or knew.
Yeah, apparently. I had no idea either. But when I was looking this up, apparently Savatage was kind of influential and big when they were starting out.
Really?
Well, and that's the funny thing. So I was reading this album, it kind of marks their first commercially successful album. And then everything after this was actually more successful still.
I mean, honestly, it's not too surprising, just because of how, like, I feel like the music really captures where metal was headed at that point in the 80s. So it makes sense that they were influential like this.
Yeah, I mean, the guitarist is obviously a good guitar player,
totally.
Like 80s metal guitar player, like your solos. It's obviously got the solos in it. And the vocalist loves the sound of his own voice. I will say that. And I mean,
I just want to talk about Beyond the Doors of the Dark real quick, and kind of that back and forth of deep, ooh, and then the falsetto that comes in that's kind of, and there are so many lyrics and there's so much voice. It's so ridiculous, but it's so definitive for mid 80s mainstream thrash.
I'm sure it fit right in with where it was, with what was going on at the time. Standout tracks to me, I really liked the side two of this. So that's after Strange Wings. Now, I will say, I think Strange Wings was probably the one that got the most radio airtime, if I was guessing.
That makes so much. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. When I heard this, I was like, I don't care. That song's rad as hell.
Yeah. I like that one. But I will say, side two of this thing is when I really started to be like, okay, this was worth the dollar that I paid for it. So side two starts off with Prelude to Madness, which basically is just Edvard Grieg, a cover of The Hall of the Mountain King. Was a classic song.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as heard in Mac and Me, Animaniacs, Rat Race. I mean, Grieg's IMDb is enormous.
All the movies we know and love.
Yes.
So after that, it goes into the actual title track, Hall of the Mountain King. That one rocks to me. It's got chanting in it. Like I picture a bunch of Lord of the Rings dwarves just like working in the mines, just chanting, you know, madness reigns in the Hall of the Mountain King. Like,
yeah, it's imposing because there's that like you were saying, the and then it kind of builds towards that high pitch. And then there's that like that sinister evil laugh in the background. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. This is insane. And I'm on board for this freak show.
Yeah. At one point, the kind of transition into the really high pitched lead vocals going, like super high.
Yeah. And just kind of out of nowhere. It's like they couldn't give themselves time to just breathe. It was like, we have to fill it with noise. It was the wall of sound for this genre.
Yes. There's some good wails in there too. Just, oh yeah. Like he'll just belt that out occasionally.
Yeah. Can't have silence.
I'm with you. Anything else? I gave you my standout tracks. Did you have one that kind of stood out to you?
So yeah, I did, as I mentioned, I liked Strange Wings. It's so locked into the sound of that time period. They own it. It's a big old arena rock track. I was singing along by the end, and I've probably listened to it like 6 or 7 times since then. I love the chorus. She flies strange wings behind a thin disguise. She flies strange wings, still tears she cries. Like, what does that mean? Who cares? I'm headbanging. To me, it's a sound where, have you ever seen Heavy Metal Parking Lot?
Yes, I have. I'm sure Taj being played in the Heavy Metal parking lot, I guarantee.
That's the first thing I thought of when I heard the track. Listen, if you have not seen Heavy Metal Parking Lot, it's a documentary and before Judas Priest. I can't remember who's opening for them. It might actually have been Winger. It's the full documentary is on YouTube. It's nuts. If you want to see how your parents were tweaking out in the 80s. You need to look this up. Yeah, so I liked it. White Witch made me want to fist fight.
Yes.
It's just a very powerful track. And I, you know, looking at it, I think I'm like you, where side B really turned me on to this. My last note on this is, I hope when future archaeologists discover our garbage society, that this is one of the first things they find, and they just completely rewrite the context of our existence based on like this and Cirith Ungol and similar bands with similar album covers. Like they find it, they're like, oh wow, these were the gods that these people were worshiping.
Yes, this must have been, everyone was into like these kingly figures with giant battle axes and demons, and yeah, I'm down for that. That's, if that's how you want to remember this era, I'm with it.
Sounds good. Yeah. And, you know, these archaeologists are going to be like, you know, how did the society fail with such strong, powerful figures leading them?
I don't have a lot else on this one. I really like this one. I agree, by the way, on White Witch. I just have in my notes, this is your standard 80s metal track. And it's in a positive way. It was very good. So the last thing I have on this one is Metal Hammer, the German magazine, metal magazine, gave this 7 out of 7 stars. So do you think it deserved a 7 out of 7 rating? And do you think a 7 out of 7 system is the appropriate way to rate albums?
It is. I mean, such a standard way of rating things. It makes me think of kind of those hospital rating systems and rating scales where it's like the really frustrated grimacing, like weeping face is a 0. And mm-hmm. then the super smiley, ready to walk out is probably like a 7. I probably would have given it, let's see, maybe a 10 out of 13. I want to create my own.
So not a
system. No, I wouldn't say it's perfect, but I would like to hear Metal Hammer's reasoning behind it. How about you?
I would probably give it 6.5 out of 7, or maybe 6 out of 7. It kind of depends.
Yeah, I think if I was living back then, I would be totally on board for a 6 out of 7.
For sure. If I'm in 1987 in the Heavy Metal parking lot getting ready to see Dokken open for Judas Priest, I'm totally giving this a 6 out of 7.
Yes. Yeah, so it's time for our final segment of the show called Didn't See That Coming, where we ask each other one random question related to today's albums. I'm starting this off, Jay, sticking with the cover theme. Pretend you're in a band or even a solo artist, what's the cover to your debut album look like?
I gotta say, it's going to be something along this Kira Thangul sort of cover. I might include a dinosaur of some kind. So like, or maybe a swamp creature, because my band's going to be pretty, you know, just thinking aloud here. I'm probably going down that sludgy doom metal sort of side of things. So I think, some sort of creature emerging from a swamp covered in like moss and stuff, maybe something in its mouth devouring it. That's what my cover is going to look like. Very green and dark.
I would definitely pay a dollar for that.
It's worth a buck at least just for the cover. My question for you is, you've heard what I paid for all of these albums. Did I get a fair shake on all of them? Or are there any that you think I got ripped off?
So two of them you paid a dollar for. There was one that was $18. There was one that was $9.99. How much was Indian Handcrafts?
Indian Handcrafts probably going to be about 15 or 20 bucks.
Okay, that one can take a hike, free up some wallet space. Yeah, I'm not throwing two Alexander Hamiltons down for that. I think the others, you definitely got a good deal, especially with all the swag that came with Cirith Ungol. I mean, it's like they were practically giving stuff away. The ones that you paid a dollar for, I mean, Dixie Dregs, they're going to give you a lifetime of memories. That's priceless.
It is priceless. I would pay tens of dollars for Dixie Dregs.
Oh, without a doubt.
And then I would also pay to see three of these bands live.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. That part of me wants to see Dixie Dregs for the band. Part of me also wants to pay to see the people at Dixie Dregs.
Absolutely. Like, it's dads, dude. It's just going to be a bunch of dads hanging out. And then like the, you know, nephews or son-in-laws that hauled to the show to go with them. I think that's who's going to be at the Dixie Dregs concert.
And I imagine
elbows with them.
I imagine if I walked in just solo, people would look at me like, what is this young guy doing here?
Why is he here? How did he hear about this?
Oh, right. My God. All right. This has been a ridiculously good time. Fortunately, it's time to turn the lights off, unless you're with Enrique Iglesias, and then don't turn off the lights. Thanks to everyone for listening today and over the past couple of weeks. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe, rate us, throw that 5-star in there, and tell others about us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at jandjoeypod. If you want to reach out to us, our email is jandjoeypod@gmail.com. We have playlists for every episode on Spotify. You can find those in the show notes. And just be good to each other.
7 out of 7 episode, Joey. I think we did. I don't know.